Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Doctors Roundtable, a forum for conversations with Atlanta's leading doctors and thought leaders about cutting-edge trends and topics in health, wellness, and lifestyle issues. Here's our host, Tanya Mack.
Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. This is a show that will be happy. Lots of people will be happy to hear about this show. I'm here today with Dr. Thomas Locke from Alpharetta, Georgia, and we will be talking about cosmetic surgery and, in particular, body contouring, which has become so, so popular for not just women anymore, right, Dr. Locke?
That's correct.
That's right. So Dr. Locke joins us. He has received his training from Howard University, did his residency at George Washington University. He's board certified in internal medicine and emergency medicine, and over these past many, many years has been getting more and more involved in the cosmetic surgery aspect of training and getting great results for patients. So welcome.
Thank you.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself to start off with?
Oh, well, I guess there could be a whole separate program on that, but I basically approach things from the perspective of an artist, and all of the things I do, I lump together under one catchphrase of personal image enhancing services.
Right, and the name of your new practice that we'd like to direct patients to is WISE, Personal Imaging Enhancement, and tell us what WISE is.
Well, WISE originally is an acronym, actually. Mm-hmm. Weight loss is the W. Mm-hmm. Image enhancing mm-hmm. is the I. We do have a special interest in things like smoking cessation. Mm-hmm. And because of my primary care and emergency medicine background, we do episodic care. That's the E. We don't spend a lot of time doing primary care, but when our patients who usually are referred for surgical kinds of things have other issues or needs, we take care of them.
Right, very good. So I actually got a chance to visit Dr. Locke in his little surgery center recently, which is lovely, girls. You would want to be there. It's in Alpharetta, so when you hear that word, it's everything you'd think that you would want to do. And he does many, many procedures. Today we're going to focus primarily on body contouring. So let's start off with, I think some patients kind of get confused with cosmetic surgeon versus plastic surgeon. So why don't we make that distinction for the
good
listeners
place to
right
start.
Off the start.
Basically, cosmetic surgery is usually initiated by the patient. We're talking about either restoration of normal or altering normal to some more desirable state, and not necessarily modification of something that's abnormal to begin with. When we say plastic surgery, you're usually more thinking reconstructive and more tissue modification kinds of things. But cosmetic surgery focuses on enhancing or restoring one's appearance.
Okay, very good. So that would be things like flank or your side, love handles, reshaping those, our bellies, our chins,
yes.
Under our arms, inner
yes.
thighs, our primary body area targets?
Absolutely. The body contouring is almost every part of the body. Certainly from chin to knee, without a doubt.
So tell us, another thing I want to talk about is when we were in your office and we were kind of going through some before and after pictures, looking at some of your results, there was a lot more men than I expected to see. So I think
20%.
Yeah, so I think it used to be thought of mostly for women, and now we're finding guys are very
Absolutely.
Interested in this.
Absolutely. Guys are image conscious, mm-hmm. and we find that lots of times it's there are ladies that bring them in. Mm-hmm. But issues like male gynecomastia, and mm-hmm. Men want a nice waistline too. I guess probably one of the most interesting tasks I've been asked to perform was working with some people out of the Pentagon who were big shot guys up for promotion mm-hmm. to general or something. And
They had to have a little help.
They call it making tape.
Oh, wow.
Where their waistline measurements have to be at a certain level or they don't get a promotion.
Okay. It's kind of like the old stewardess days, only on the guy's side.
Yeah, and they're doing that. Even some of the police officer kinds of institutions, not mm-hmm. just local police, but mm-hmm. Deputies and many other entities now have reasons why they get into the cosmetic surgery mm-hmm. arena.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a little bit about what kind of patients are candidates and body areas that can be affected by body contouring in a very positive way. But let's talk to the listeners a little bit about how. So I know one of the things that makes you a very unusual in Atlanta is that you have many different kinds of tools at your disposal to actually get the results artistically and in the body that you want. So why don't we just kind of orient the listeners and walk through what some of those are?
Yeah, there's a host of approaches, but I've never had allegiance to any one single technology. So we use them all. I started out with lasers, and that's where I have the greatest amount of experience. I was introduced subsequently to the VASER technology with a V. VASER is based on ultrasound technology. And the most recent tool or set of tools we have in our tool chest is the infrasonic technology. I call it the vibro-lipo, where infrasonic sound waves actually help to emulsify fat and make it easier to anesthetize patients, and has lots of advantages as well.
Now, is the laser heat?
The laser is light and therefore light. Heat, yes. And basically, that's the one that's most well studied. It also has the greatest limitations in terms of appropriate candidates. There are more restrictions in terms of who's a good candidate for a laser procedure than, say, an infrasonic technology. Lots of people who would not be appropriate candidates for one or the other would be appropriate candidates for a combination of two or more of those three. And it's not rare that we use all three, even in a single procedure. So by combining technologies, we can overcome obstacles that one or another technology alone might not permit you to do a good job.
And let's talk a little bit about what patients can expect. So if they come to see you, I have questions like, could I do more than one body area or at one time? Or how do I know if I'm a good candidate for a certain thing? How would you evaluate me if I presented to your office?
That's where we spend a lot of time in our consultations, which are complimentary, helping people to establish realistic expectations. And a lot of times the concept is what we may not be able to do in a single session, we may be able to accomplish in multiple sessions with some other interventions in between. Combining medically supervised weight loss and treatment of pre-existing hormonal issues and all of the different barriers to success with just traditional surgery, if you address those obstacles, it makes for a lot more people being appropriate candidates.
And we talked before about the importance of preparing patients pre-procedure. So
absolutely.
Things like, if I stop smoking, what would be the end result if I came? Would I heal faster?
Absolutely. That's a good example. Smoking doesn't keep you from being able to have surgery, but it makes a huge difference in terms of your post-operative course.
Is it the vasoconstriction or what?
I think it's a multitude of things. The smoking definitely does reduce blood flow by way of vasoconstriction and other mechanisms. But I believe some of the effects on epithelial tissues we read about in the lungs probably apply to places like skin. We see changes with other aesthetic things that we do in terms of like facial appearance and wrinkles and lots of things that cannot all be explained by vasoconstriction or blood flow issues. But cigarettes do a lot of different things. If you look at twins, one who smokes and one who doesn't, the smoking twin will look a lot older. And even a given individual, if we convince them to quit smoking, months and certainly years later, their appearance will change.
Okay, and then the biggie probably is just, do I have to really lose all my weight before I could really get a good result that I wanted? Or what are some, how do you think about that when you evaluate a patient?
Well, the controversy is in traditional plastic surgery circles, you know, it's pretty common to hear that body contouring procedures should not be viewed as a treatment for obesity. I disagree with that. I think as a part of a total program where you address other issues concurrently, you can use surgery as a tool to motivate people, mm-hmm. and by approaching things in a staged manner, mm-hmm. a lot of people who might otherwise not be candidates become candidates. Mm-hmm. So I don't routinely advocate surgery as a means for treating obesity, mm-hmm. but I do believe that it is a tool that belongs in the tool chest, mm-hmm. because people can be motivated.
And they can get some benefit, yeah, so it might keep
Absolutely.
Them going. Well, is there a certain BMI that you that will rule them out? That
No. I guess the highest BMI I've worked on was about a 44. Mm-hmm. I prefer if someone has a BMI above 30 or 35 for sure to establish a downward trend.
Okay, prior to the procedure.
And yes, prior to the surgery, and just if possible, just the downward trend more than any absolute number, mm-hmm. makes a sufficient difference in the improvement in their post-operative recovery that I don't feel it necessary to set absolute guidelines. Right. I'm more concerned about the pre-existing conditions that come with a BMI of 40, mm-hmm. than I am the absolute number.
Right.
Because there's healthy people with BMIs in the 30s, and there's unhealthy people with a BMI of 23 or 24.
Right. So you have to look at all of the indicators prior.
The other issues are sometimes more important than just one number.
Okay, very good. Now, it sounds like with all these different technologies, you had to undergo a lot of training, because this is kind of like on-the-job training, right? There's an art to this, not just
Absolutely.
The technique.
Well, there's a lot to be learned, but the reality is these technologies are not taught in anybody's residency program. You do learn from other doctors doing these things. You do learn,
and they probably change since you were resident anyway, right? So you got to keep up.
Some of the devices we use weren't even invented, mm-hmm. when people who as recently as 5 years ago completed their residencies.
Right.
So you do have to learn it in postgraduate seminar kind of settings and preceptorships, and you do have to do a lot of self-study. And, you know, this is more art sometimes, mm-hmm. than science. The tools are scientifically based, mm-hmm. but they don't have very many art classes in a plastic surgery residency.
That's right. You know? Right.
So the art
and everybody's
part's an individual
so,
matter.
Yes, you have to go along with the patient for sure. Well, one of the things that I think a lot of women and men think about when they think about body contouring is, am I awake? Am I asleep? Do I do it outpatient? Do I go to the hospital? How does this all work? So tell us a little bit about how they're processed, and when they decide to have surgery, the consult's over, we've decided we can get some good result, I show up that day, and then what happens?
Well, all of my patients are wide awake. We do use medication to sedate you and relax you a little bit, but there's a lot of things I can say is not wrong with you if you can talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
So it eliminates some of the greatest risks associated with plastic surgical procedures, mm-hmm. and just the risks associated with being in a hospital
general
setting.
General anesthesia and the infection
and general anesthesia.
And like
all those things we eliminate by using an approach known as tumescent anesthesia, where we still can numb up wide areas and accomplish great things.
So is that done through local injections?
We do use a local anesthetic, mm-hmm. In solution so that it's very okay. dilute. We exploit the chemistry of lidocaine, where it's very lipophilic. Mm-hmm. And the pharmacokinetics when we use lidocaine instilled directly into fat is very different than what you read on the internet about lidocaine in the bloodstream.
Mm-hmm.
So those chemical realities where, you know, something that normally would run out of its effectiveness in a matter of minutes or hours, you know, 24 or more hours later, that lidocaine is still bound to fat and people are still numb.
Okay.
So we take advantage of that phenomenon. And those kinds of realities make it possible to do things with a wide awake patient.
Mm-hmm.
Then that otherwise might not be possible unless you use general anesthesia.
Mm-hmm. So would I be groggy, or would I actually be talking to you, or would I?
Well, it's kind of like you had one or two too many beers.
Okay,
you know,
it's unfortunate. I can relate to that.
But we don't get anybody more sedated than that.
Okay,
we want to just allay your apprehensions. I've done several patients with absolutely no sedation at all, people who were well acquainted with the procedure and had to go to work when we finished.
I wouldn't think that'd be possible. I'm a chicken.
I don't encourage it. We generally encourage people to take a day or two off, but they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
And so in situations where people didn't have a driver, or in situations where we were forced to allow them to go to work for the night shift, and that's happened more than a few times, we can minimize the sedation. It takes a little longer to talk them through the procedure.
Okay, so I would come to the office. I'd have some kind of local anesthetic, may or may not have sedation.
Mm-hmm.
What would be like an average length of time for my procedure? I know it's body specific and how much work you're doing, but say for one area, what would be like average?
Well, I'm slow. I don't take pride in being faster than the next guy.
Uh-huh.
But it depends on the individual more than the procedure, to be honest.
Okay.
And some procedures in one patient, it would take you an hour and a half or two. It's going to take 2 or 3 hours for the next patient because you have to spend some time calming them down.
Okay.
But on average, we try not to schedule things that take more than 1 to 4 hours. But, if I hit the six-hour mark, I haven't set any records in my office.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then what is the in-office recovery process?
Very little. We reestablish that your vital signs have not changed drastically. We get you up and walk you around. Maybe 20% of people are at risk for a little Valsalva kinds of things that occur, syncopal episodes. We make sure you're not having any of those things before we turn you loose. But we're talking to you the entire time, and the time it takes to wrap you up in an elastic garment after the surgery is plenty of time to recover from the sedation and the anesthesia that we've used. Mm-hmm. So it's no prolonged recovery at all.
Okay, very good. So pretty quick results for not very much time invested from the procedure.
Absolutely.
And so you have the consult, the surgery, and then a day or two, depending upon how much work was done.
Absolutely. And the beauty of some of the procedures is we actually induce the body to establish a new healing process. So especially with the laser-based procedures, improvement in contours continues for up to 6 or even 12 weeks.
Mm. So when would I actually expect to see what I'm going to live with? So if I come and see you, I have my love handles worked on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that there's a lot of swelling and things right at the time of the surgery, but would it be 3 months or six
weeks.
Months?
Weeks.
Weeks,
okay. Not months. Usually, even there's an immediate
benefit. I can see.
Some is pretty obvious immediately. Then there's a cumulative benefit, and that cumulative benefit is even more enhanced when we combine it with medically supervised weight loss. So we tell patients, you work on the pounds, I'll work on the inches, and that's a heck of a 1-2 punch.
That is a good 1-2 punch.
So with the combined approach, and especially using a staged surgical approach, we can accomplish some pretty amazing things. Size 22 dress size down to a 12 is not rare.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, you're the first one I've actually talked about, but I know this happens, about first tackle this area, then recover from that, then tackle another area.
When
you talk about breaking it up and not trying to have a total body redo, is there a recommendation for don't have your procedures between, wait a month, wait 2 months?
I don't like to work on areas that have previously been worked on sooner than 6 to 12 weeks. However, we can work on non-contiguous areas even sooner. But I like, a minimum of 6 weeks of recovery for just good healing and nutritional considerations. During the immediate post-operative period, for example, we cannot allow people to be on a crash diet. Their body's forming new collagen in the areas we've worked on, and we want adequate protein intake, adequate calories, because the healing requires energy.
Protein. Mm-hmm. And when would I come and see you after the procedure? Would I see you within a couple days or within a week, couple weeks? Or
I see my patients post-op? At 1, 3, 6, and 12 weeks at a minimum.
Okay.
And there's a need to see people sooner or more frequently. That's not uncommon.
Okay. So let's say here's another thing I want to know about the procedure. Am I going to have stitches?
Sometimes. In areas where the skin is likely to be exposed, we do suture The incisions are like 3 millimeters to begin with.
How much is that in inches for our lay folks out there?
Like a quarter of an inch.
Okay.
Yeah. So we don't have to stitch. Mm-hmm. We choose to stitch when the incisions are in places where it might make a cosmetic difference.
Mm-hmm.
So for aesthetic purposes, sometimes we do stitch the incisions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a school of thought where you reduce the risk of complications like seromas and infections by leaving the sutures open. I'm leaving the incisions mm-hmm. open and mm-hmm. not suturing them.
Mm-hmm.
So we strategically, at least some of the time, if not most of the time, leave mm-hmm. some of the incisions open for purposes of drainage of the tumescent fluid. But that's, again, one of those art judgment kinds of considerations.
Okay. And let's talk a little bit more about post-op potential complications. So let's talk about the procedure itself. Are there some potential complications during the procedure?
It can happen. I mean, I have on our website a picture of bruising.
Mm-hmm.
That probably would be the most common. And I consider that a consequence more than a complication.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like normal.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But
I get my blood drawn, I bruise. I haven't had any surgery.
So that it goes away completely. We don't have to do a whole lot. And there are ways we intervene preoperatively and post-op in terms of supplements to prevent it or minimize it. Seromas are a complication where there's a pocket of fluid accumulating in the space where fat used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Happens occasionally.
Does it just get reabsorbed over time? Or
If it is in a strategic location, sometimes we actually aspirate it and remove the fluid in the postoperative. That's one of those things we look for in the follow-up visits.
Okay.
Infections, you know, I've seen 2 out of 450 cases.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely, burns that you cannot identify immediately might become manifest in 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen other people's burns, and I've had 2 of my own out of 450.
Mm-hmm. Is that from the laser equipment?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's rare, but it can happen, so we tell people about it, and almost always it's manageable. The hypothetical stuff I've never seen before, you know, we talk about that too.
Mm-hmm.
But those things that we've just mentioned actually do occur, you know, 1, 2, up to 5% at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So
no matter what your surgery is, you're not guaranteed. So you're going to see the same kind of surgical complications
Absolutely.
As you would for anybody. Okay, that sounds good. I know that another trend that I've seen in terms of kinds of patients that you're seeing is the older patient.
Absolutely. I think my record's 70. I'm looking for someone older. But I look at physiologic age and not chronologic age.
Mm-hmm.
And I got into this from an anti-aging perspective. When I hit 50, I said, it's time to do something different. 7 years ago, I said, okay, this is not right. I'm not acting like I used to when I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
So we find that...
I'd be there with you myself.
We find that as we address those concerns, because, you know, 50 is the new 30. When people...
Hollywood says that for sure.
when people have interests that you associate with being younger, then they want to have a body that looks like a younger person.
Mm-hmm.
So philosophically, I'm more concerned about the health issues
mm-hmm.
that come with being on the planet 60 or 70 or 80 years,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to how many... you know, different birthdays have you had, and
mm-hmm.
absolutely excluding you mm-hmm. on that basis. That makes no sense.
Do you think that's just patients are attracted to you because they know that you're kind of experienced in that, or do you think that's like a trend as the baby boomers
age? I think it's
age?
A trend in general. I hope people are attracted
mm-hmm.
because they know my philosophy,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know that to be a fact. But mm-hmm. it's a kind of situation where as the population ages, we'll have no choice.
Yeah, and they'll have money to do it. So
there's a smaller percentage
right.
of young people.
That's right, yeah. So I think you're headed for good times there, I guess that's what I'm saying. Another thing that I have seen a lot of body contouring for, read a lot about, is in the area of post-gastric bypass.
Yes.
So people that drop 100, because that's another popular treatment for obesity, but then they're left with this
now,
uneven and...
In that arena, a little more frequently than in the other modalities of weight loss,
mm-hmm.
we do see people who really would benefit from the traditional tummy tuck. Mm-hmm. But a high percentage of patients referred for things like tummy tucks can mm-hmm. really have skin tightening procedures mm-hmm. with a laser mm-hmm. and be avoided all that downtime mm-hmm. that's associated with the traditional tummy
tucks. But even in the smaller
tucks.
Areas like your arms or your mm-hmm. chin or something not as dramatic as a tummy
yeah,
tuck.
Yeah, for skin tightening, the laser does amazing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're very happy with the results we're getting and sparing people some more mm-hmm. you know, risky operations.
Right. And then I know another area that people seem to be paying attention to or generating a lot of body contouring interest is post-baby.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, that's some of our favorite patients.
And why
because
is that?
A lot of hormonal issues in the post-op mm-hmm. period enhance healing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And just the natural events that take place as a woman's body restores itself.
Mm-hmm.
If we combine some of our aesthetic and cosmetic techniques, we can, you know, enhance that which is normal again.
Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of magnifying what the body's doing already.
Absolutely.
Then, in terms
and not to mention, you know, there's a motivation there. You know, women want their pre-baby body back.
Yes, we do.
So they're more likely to comply with the things you advise them to do.
So, very good.
So that's a favorite population, and they okay. do very well.
Very good. Well, you take you have the philosophy of really looking at the patient. What is their expected result, and what are they personally doing? Are there patients that are just contraindicated for body contouring?
On occasion.
Okay.
There are some situations where pre-existing medical conditions or medications there have to take that cannot be discontinued for a time, or people on anticoagulants, for example, and you can't discontinue them.
Mm-hmm.
There are rare situations where you just mm-hmm. absolutely cannot mm-hmm. have surgery. So those are the examples of some of the things that we insist on addressing in a preoperative consultation, because
mm-hmm.
You can't identify those situations without evaluating the patient.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do you reckon? You talked a little bit about expectations with the patient. So, mm-hmm. the patient that says, "I want to lose 25 pounds in my gut by this afternoon." How do you manage that? Yeah, so I would guess that people really don't. You know, you
happen.
And I talked about the customer relations part of getting people to realize what is possible and what is expected.
Yeah, realistic expectations. We think in inches. And
okay.
not pounds. That's the first thing.
Okay.
When it comes
to
do
measurements prior
absolutely.
To the surgery? Okay.
Absolutely. And that's one of our most powerful motivational tools. When you come in at 1, 3, and 6 weeks, my nurse does measurements and stuff, and wow.
And then you
wow.
can see. Okay.
So, yes, the inches are critical. I don't like to talk too much about pounds, but mm-hmm. when people ask, mm-hmm. you know, we can expect about 5.
I think that's how we're conditioned. I think we're
yeah.
conditioned to look at weight, and we don't really self-measure in inches. So
correct.
That we just it's easy for us to step on the scale, so that's how our brains are hardwired.
Yes, that's mm-hmm. a programming thing, and I think we do gradually get people to learn about percent body fat.
Mm-hmm.
We get to talk about inches. We talk about appearance.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just fitting in a size 16 instead mm-hmm. of a size 20,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a significant thing for
mm-hmm.
some women.
Mm-hmm.
And you get them down from a 22 to a 14 mm-hmm. or even lower, you know, it doesn't matter if she's still 160 or 170 mm-hmm. pounds.
Yeah, they can just go in a store and pull something off the rack, so they're thrilled.
Exactly.
Right.
So we focus on a lot of things other than pounds,
mm-hmm.
and you can make people happy, but you counsel them and let them know realistically, this is what we can do, this is what we
mm-hmm.
can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And if the procedures they're asking for will not make a visible mm-hmm. difference or measurable difference, we don't do it.
Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about compression garments post-surgery.
A critical step in the recovery. Compression garments really just reduce risks of things like the seromas. They enhance the sculpting that we do. They facilitate the skin contracting. They reduce the risk of infections, I believe. And, you know, it kind of puts a woman in the mind of being smaller than she used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So I honestly have gotten some feedback from women that they think it suppresses their appetite. I don't know about that part. But I think it's
if
more...
If they're so tight, I can't breathe. I might buy into the
perception. But there are many benefits, and almost always, without exception, in areas where we've removed substantial amounts of fat, we have to use a compression
garment.
And then
about how long would I have to wear those?
Depending on the procedure, weeks to months.
Month sounds really long.
I jokingly say this is your new address till I see you at three and the 6 week follow up visit. Okay. You got to live in it.
Yeah, well, that's a good way to look at it. But you know what I learned a long time ago? You don't want to be the reason that your surgery doesn't do well.
That's correct.
So compliance is very important.
The more the merrier, and too little's a problem, too much is not.
Right.
Okay. So the more time you spend in that garment, the more you enhance.
Do they sleep in
your result? That's the best time. Now, after about 2 to 6 weeks, depending on the procedure. I do cut back to maybe 8 hours a day sometimes, and it works better as far as preventing creases and wrinkles and stuff if the person is either supine or standing. You know, for people who sit all day at work, that's not always the best time to wear the garment. So for after the period of 2 to 6 weeks, when we cut back to 8 hours a day, sleeping in it's a good idea sometimes.
Okay, very good. Well, I hadn't thought about that, but after talking to you, I am thinking about that.
The prolonged sitting in the garment sometimes is counterproductive.
Okay, very good. Well, we've talked about what kind of patients, what kind of areas can be positively affected, what they can expect when they come to see you in terms of the pre-consult during the procedure and afterwards, what kind of equipment that you use, the tools of the trade, and kind of a little bit about recovery and anesthesia and complications. Is there anything that you think that we haven't covered in regards to what patients can expect or just to
nutrition?
They should know. Okay, let's talk about that.
Nutrition matters a lot, both your preoperative nutritional state and even more so your postoperative nutritional state, and that's something we always address. When people learn about ingesting the right kinds of foods, they accidentally sometimes reduce their total calories substantially. So the issues that we start out addressing, you know, become less of an issue just on that basis. So with certain supplements, we can reduce bruising, and with other...
Like what supplements?
Arnica, for example, and bromelain. I like, and depending on a person's diet, sometimes supplements of vitamin C and zinc. People who have certain medications, there'll be additional considerations. People who are diabetic, you know, think about the chromium and so forth. And a lot of other things that don't get talked about enough in these kinds of considerations would be sort of in a nutritional vein. But when we have people who have pre-diabetes, you know, high percentage of folks who show up who have fat to be removed don't know they're going to be a diabetic. And we have, you know, medical diagnostic testing now that can identify these people long before they're overt diabetics. So bringing that to their attention and changing how they eat, you know, before they're diagnosable as a diabetic enhances their recovery, first of all. But secondly, you've made a pretty impressive lifestyle statement when you actually create opportunities to cure diabetes. And I don't think that's an overstatement. I know from... you know, convincing examples that fat per se causes a degree of insulin resistance that when we remove the fat, there's an improvement in diabetes disproportionate to whatever else we're doing as far as treatment interventions and even weight loss. So I know that there's something there that needs to be better defined, but I do believe that the fat removal per se actually improves diabetes.
So anecdotally, you've seen good results.
Strong anecdotal data.
And what about post-treatment? Do you increase protein for healing?
Or? Yes, the relative proportion of protein, carbohydrates, and fats is altered in the post-op state.
Okay.
Higher protein, less carbs, you know, calories are less restricted in the post-op state than, say, after 6 weeks. We can get pretty aggressive.
Okay.
But during that first 6 weeks post-op, we need enough calories to, you know, fix the body.
Okay, very good. So thank you for bringing up the nutrition part. Anything else you think of that the listeners would need to know when they're considering body contouring?
I think some of the other emotional issues that people are responding to as far as why they eat impulsively and all these kinds of things that we occasionally get to address. Those are just as important as any of the other stuff we talk about because we do a wonderful job and we don't address those issues. You know, they're going to mess up
how
my
you
good
got
work,
you
know?
That's right. Want to make sure we keep you there.
I take that personally. When you,
yeah, so you do some degree of counseling during that pre-op appointment.
We have to.
Okay, very good. Very good. Well, I think we've covered a good round perspective on body contouring, which is one of your big areas of specialty that you've gotten this additional training for. And I appreciate you being a guest today. Before we leave, why don't we let our listeners know how they can reach you?
Well, we're in Alpharetta. The phone number at the office is 770-680-2197. And our website is wisecosmeticsurgery.com, WISECosmeticSurgery.com.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks for your listeners. Tune in again next week. And thanks to HealthGate, www.healthgate, our sponsor, where you can find great doctors like Dr. Locke and cost savings to go with that. Have a great afternoon.
The Doctor's Roundtable has been a production brought to you by HealthGate and Business Radio X. HealthGate is a groundbreaking website where board-certified doctors and specialists offer savings on out-of-pocket healthcare costs. For more information about HealthGate, please visit www.healthgate.com or call 404-692-5377. We hope you tune in next week, and thank you for listening.